Alex, I'm so excited to talk to you. I asked you before I hit record what you think separates a book from a great book, the kind of book that people tell other people they have to read. And you started off by saying you can't say something just because it sounds good. So first off, what did you mean by that?
So if you're letting people just talk off of what they're used to saying, they'll often repeat cliches. They'll end up using a lot of like fluffy consulting language or industry language of whatever. You know, if I'm going to incentivize, that can mean something. But also, if I'm talking to people who say things like, it's a circular thought and it goes in a circular direction, or like they'll end up repeating themselves or using only the lightest version of general principles that don't, everybody says these things, but they don't actually mean anything. And so part of my job as a ghostwriter is to pull them down and make them think specifics, make them think
Yeah.
in depth. What do you mean exactly? Yeah, go
I
ahead.
was curious what you meant when you said, if you're a consultant, you can't just use consultant speak all the time. I was like, I need to ask her what she means by that too. Is that what you're talking about here?
That is partially what I'm talking about. Yes. There's
Okay,
a
so how else are is this like a problem for a lot of like consultants that want to write books is they write in like consultant speak?
Yes. And other experts in fields, sometimes it's because they're used to only talking to their peers, and their peers will hear a word or a term, and they will understand the five paragraphs that the other person means by that one word. But when you're talking outside your field, you don't understand that five paragraphs of context. It doesn't mean anything in depth. And so using industry language or using like shortcut language doesn't work in a book if you're talking to anyone but your peers.
Gotcha. And so the opposite of that would be what?
The opposite of that would be, explaining it in clear terms, like you would to either your 8-year-old niece, always a great shortcut for it. Do I make sense? Does this make sense to my 8-year-old? No, I probably don't understand it well enough, or I'm probably not working hard enough to communicate.
Okay.
Or if you're trying to talk to a general business audience, does this make sense to my cousin in a completely different industry when I sit across from them at the Thanksgiving table and they have exactly 3 minutes and they want to know an answer?
Okay. This gets me into another kind of philosophical question about the craft of ghostwriting. Because I've heard a ghostwriter say like you don't want to write for everybody. You want to write for a very specific person, and you in fact said this when we were talking in our pre-interview. But then how does that relate to like making sure that like anyone, you know, like across industries, 8-year-old niece could understand it?
So, for example, I was writing a book for someone in the medical field, and he was wanting to write to a different part of the medical field for reasons I won't go into. I'm under NDA.
Okay.
And so, obviously, I am not a medical person. I'm perfectly educated, like my mom's into biology. Like I have a general like person background, and I'm not scared of the big words, but I am not a doctor. I have not gone to medical school. And the entirety of the book was written to people who had gone to medical school, although in a different specialty than the person I was writing for. And so part of my job as the ghostwriter would be like, I don't know what that word means. Does your audience know what that word means? Does this person who's sitting in this specific field understand this word? And if so, let's use it. And if not, let's back out and use plain language that would make sense to anyone to make sure that your general principle is getting across for sure. And sometimes my guy would come back with the, oh, yeah, everybody knows that. We learned that in year two of medical school. And I'm like, yes. And then I took a note and I defined it on the side and I did some reading and I made sure I understood that term deep so that when I use it with all of the background and baggage with at least three paragraphs behind it. But if he went, oh no, that's me. That's the extra 10 years of experience in this highly specialized field. My guy's not going to know about that. Then I say, all right, let's tease it out. Help me to understand as a bystander, and let's talk it out until I can help you get to the plain language how you explain it to your 8-year-old niece or to your
Got it.
adult cousin across the table.
Awesome. Yeah, I think the question of like how much do you try to zoom out and like go after like a broader audience versus how much you go after a particular audience is probably a big question for the craft of ghostwriting. There's something that you said that I want you to talk about. So when we were talking before I hit record, something that you said, figure out what your audience needs, like what your audience wants and needs. Something that would make them sit up and want to talk about it with their friends. How do you like through the like how do you in your ghostwriting make sure that that's what you're getting out of your clients?
Sometimes you have to push back. Sometimes you have to say, like, what's going on here? One of the things that Scribe taught us that I ended up actually piggyback on using even in a bigger way in my own work and with my own clients is a general principle from copywriting, which is you will be most effective in writing if you understand the pain points of your audience. Like, what are they feeling at this moment? What is the problem? What is the like thing keeping up them up at night that is going to make them take action to read the book or to buy random thing here? Like, if you can meet them where they are, demonstrate that you understand their pain and provide them a solution in a way that feels authentic with examples and that actually delivers what you're promising, people will follow you anywhere. And if you can give them an insight into their problem, you can put words around their problem. You can say you have this pain, and then you describe how this pain works, or give them insight into it, or give them ways to like think about it differently, or to approach like because pain points are often about I feel confused and overwhelmed. And so if your pain here is that I feel confused and overwhelmed, if I give you words around it and I give you a framework and I help you figure out how not to be confused and overwhelmed, people will follow you anywhere. And they will talk to their friends who have that same confusion and overwhelm and be like, you have to read this book. And the word of mouth is ultimately what sells books. And that reaching and demonstrating that you understand their problem at a deep level, that you have a lot of experience with it, and that you can help them solve their problem, not just the overwhelm in most cases, but also here's what you do about it and how you approach it, and here's how you can get help. Like, that's the person that's going to hire you as a result of the nonfiction book that you're writing. That's the person who's going to tell other friends about it, that is going to help you get more sales. Like, there's a lot of people who just write their wisdom out of their head and they never sit around to ask, okay, what is the audience getting out of this? Why do they care? Like, in most cases, people are actually driven to share something that's deeply important to them because it did solve a problem in their life. It did solve pain in their life. But they've been away from that pain long enough, they forget to explain the why. They forget to start with the problem. And that's where you as a reader usually want to start is I hate to use diet examples, but they make sense when we're talking about pain points. People who want to lose weight, or for that matter, gain weight, to be inclusive. They're for whatever reason, they're feeling it hard. They really want to do the thing. And before they go pick up this book and like change everything, you have to demonstrate that you understand their unique frustration and why they would choose this specific approach. Otherwise, you know, there's a dime a dozen. You could go anywhere, but you want to demonstrate that you want to earn trust, you want to get attention and keep attention.
Yeah. I have a question that I like to ask everybody that I talk to that is in the profession, and it's how does an unknown author sell thousands of copies in a short period of time predictably? Haven't gotten a lot of great answers on this question, but what I liked when I asked you that question is you talked about how word of mouth is what sells books. Can you talk a little bit about your own experience? Like, because I feel like we should give the listeners context on who you are. So, like, who are you? How did you learn this stuff? What kind of writing work do you do? And how did you come to understand the craft of writing?
So I'm a published science fiction mystery novel out from Penguin. I did that professionally for a few years. And to do that, I had to get really good at craft. Great. But I also ended up going to conferences. And to be a fiction writer, you're expected to like understand the entirety of Your career these days, especially. Even the big publishers are expecting you to do your own marketing and to have an idea for branding and to keep up with the website and to connect with your readers. Like, it's just baseline expectations. And so I went to all of the conferences and all of the places and kept up with things. And I've ended up learning a lot from romance writers of all people. They end up being on the cutting edge of digital marketing for whatever reason. And so I end up hanging out with them a lot. I end up learning a lot about marketing and like the craft of writing, how to get attention, how to keep attention, because no one's going to read a whole fiction book if you're boring. Zero people in the world.
Yeah.
No one's going to publish you if you're boring. Like, you have to get attention within the
at
first.
Yeah, at least with nonfiction, it's like you can get away with being helpful if you're boring. Like, if you're boring but helpful, that's at least better than, you know, being boring and unhelpful. But in fiction, it's like, if you're boring, that's the thing that makes people read fiction, is that it's not boring.
Yes. And so when I started approaching nonfiction, I took the same approach, as I had to learn how to get attention and keep attention and to be smooth as silk and easy to read, because the minute you put down a novel, that's it. Like, they're gone forever. And so I had to learn how to like ask questions and leave things open and move them along. And then in nonfiction, I try to, you know, make promises at the beginning that I then fulfill slowly over the course of the book. I have designed ones that are more modular, where you like are addressing a specific thing in a specific chapter and you can pick them up interchangeably. But even then, like, I'm pulling on themes. And so I moved over from fiction writing into book marketing a little bit. And when I needed a little bit of money, I moved into copywriting and did website copy for a while. And then I ended up getting a job with Scribe Media, writing books. And I just took to it like a duck to water. It's like my favorite. And some of that is because I've always read business books, because I find it fascinating. And I've always read self-help books. And I've always read like pop sci books and all of these, like, the world is so cool and people are so cool. And so the opportunity to sit and learn from somebody for like 40 hours on the phone, this is a guy who's like at the cutting edge of how to get 12 people to like interact with each other and solve hard problems without killing each other. We call that agile. But like putting people in, that's one approach, but like everything is, how do we get humans to interact in a different way? How do we like do hard things better as a species or as a group? Like, it's all the stuff that I was fascinated with when I was a science fiction writer, and only I get to learn from people who are experts on one corner of it. I can't believe that they pay me to do this job. To be honest, I love it. But I'm such a nerd that I once had a 2-hour conversation on an airplane with a conveyor belt salesman. Okay. So that was for fun. I mean, I'm that person. So
that's awesome. I feel like that's an essential skill set for being a ghostwriter, is that kind of curiosity.
It's really fun. Also, there's a whole city of conveyor belts under the airport. I'm just saying, it's really cool.
Okay. What do you think, just out of curiosity, what do you think is more important to optimize for in a book? How good the book is at attention retention, or how unique of a thing the book is saying?
The more unique the thing the people are saying, the more it will tend to get and keep attention. So you're not actually talking about two separate things. Mm. What I think you were almost asking, and here's where my ghostwriting hat comes out, but I think you were almost asking how useful does the book need to be?
Yes, how useful the book needs to be.
And how in depth does it need to go, and how many like helpful details, and like how quickly do we need to get to the right answer, and like how in depth do we need to go, versus like how entertaining does it need to be along the way? And those are in fact two different questions. And we can be Malcolm Gladwell. The man is incredibly entertaining. I mean, he can make anything entertaining, nothing but respect. Or, you know, a dry textbook author who can change your life. Ideally, we would all be kind of somewhere in the middle. We would be like Brené Brown, or the lady who wrote Come As You Are, or like very, like, it's very readable. It's not that difficult to get through. You're not like crying and boredom along the way, but you've also got enough meat to it that like you aren't just coming up with one fluffy principle. You're coming up with like eight different ways that principle applies and like how to think about it more deeply and how to apply it to your life. That's the sweet spot of business books or self-help books or science books or whatever. I want to write a book that has that depth to it, but that is easy for the distractible CEO to listen to in an audiobook on his way to work. Like,
Great.
that's the kind of book I want to write.
I'd love to get a little bit practical with you for ghostwriters that are listening that maybe struggle with this. How do you approach the task of making sure that you are writing something that is saying something that's really helpful and useful, but doing it in a way that's really good at keeping and holding the attention of the reader? Like, what are the steps to making sure that you do that well as a ghostwriter?
I do a much longer planning period at the beginning of a book than a lot of people do. Some people will just ask a few questions and then like shape the material on the back end,
Okay.
or they'll take like a pile of things that the person gives them and a few interviews and like stick them all together and put them in an order that makes sense and leave some holes and like work that through. I've never liked how that has worked out for me, and it's usually twice the amount of work. I can get to a good answer that way, but it's a lot of work. It's usually better to start with making them give you an example that has a lot of emotional resonance, or to make them tell a story. Okay, why does that matter? I'm always asking why. I am a professional 8-year-old. Like, seriously, like it is my job to go, yes, but why? I don't understand, but why? Because humans are storytelling machines. Like, we make narratives in our brains, to the point where when you have PTSD, like literally one of the therapies they tell you is to like make a coherent story out of what has happened to you, because it helps bring you peace and calm the brain down. We are story making machines, and we are story interpreting machines. And so telling at least enough of a story, even if it's like, you know, if you have this problem and you solve it this way, then you can get this. That's actually a story. That's a narrative. And so rather than giving people a whole bunch of like random things on the page or a list of things, make them make sense. Give them a why. Tell them a first you this, then you this. You say, if you do this, then you get this. Make meaning. So don't just write a description of something, which you're not going to do a lot in nonfiction anyway, but sometimes you do. Every detail you choose should matter. And then you often need to start with why. You talked about with the podcast how you like this structure of what, why, how. And I like that structure. I like starting with a hook. I like, you know, coming up with like a general like principle or thesis for the section or the chapter or the book. But often the like I may state that, but I'm going to tell you why really fast. I'm going to tell
Yeah.
you why emotionally, then I'm going to tell you what I mean in like one tiny paragraph, and then we're going to have five paragraphs of why. Because when you forget the why, then it's like my seventh grade history teacher. My seventh grade history teacher attempting to teach me Civil War history in a bad way, gave me a list of battles and dates and said, you need to know these. But why? Why do I need to know them? I don't care. I don't at all. Versus I actually became a history major in college because I had people who would sit down and like tell me social history and the history of wars, and here's why it matters. And in the War of the Three Henrys, why the first Henry attacked the second Henry and got the third Henry involved. Yes, there's an actual War of Three Henrys. I love this war. But it's the why, and why do you care? You need to know who your person is so that you can know why they care. You can tell them why you care. You need to sell the idea to them a little bit. And if it's going to be boring and in depth and nuanced, and if you're going to have to learn 18 things before you can really start changing your life, and some of those are boring, then I need to make the case for you up front. Yes, these 18 things are boring, and three of them are hard. And here's why you care. And
Yeah.
then we go into the things.
That's good. I thought it was interesting that the first thing you started saying was that you have a long planning period. What do you mean by long? Like, how long is the planning period?
I've seen people do, I've heard rumors that people can get what we used to call the North Star, like what do you want out of the book, what it's generally about, and all of the outline done in one or two calls. I've often found that people don't do the necessary thinking. I've had a couple people who can get through it that fast. They know what they want to say already. It's just putting it in order. And I love those people. Those are great. But often people are like halfway through the thinking process. And if I let them get into full-on content calls, only being halfway through their thinking process, it's going to end up feeling vague and muddy on the page. And so I personally would rather like push back, even though it's early, even though I have to earn a lot of trust in how I talk about that and setting expectations and tell them why we have to do the thing. Again, why is very important. We like why.
I often just forget about why. I'm a very like strategy minded kind of person. I want to know like what is going to get me to XYZ outcome. And I literally like I will go like I'll go on podcasts and talk about my business and whatever and like spend the whole time just talking about what and how and never talk about like why do I make kids books in the first place? I'm like I have this problem like deep in my DNA of like forgetting to say why.
And the why is one of those things that, and why I call them the why is the sky blue questions. Because if you're an expert, the hardest thing in the world to explain to a newbie is the obvious thing that everyone knows when you're an expert. And so I warn them, I'm going to be the why is the sky blue person. And the hardest thing in the world is I'm going to ask you an obvious thing and you're going to have to explain it to me in the terms you would to like an everyday average person. And that's going to be very stressful. And it's the thing that's going to make the book successful. And so I try to warn them it's going to happen. And then when it happens, I'm like, this is a sky is blue question. I know this is hard. Let's back up and think this through. And then ideally, they would have. So one of the things that I do in these kinds of conversations, which is a lot like ghostwriting, is I often set a little pin in my head on different things to make sure that I've co covered everything. And right now, the pin in my head is telling me that I didn't give you a full answer to a previous question. So we're going to go back to that. Hi, I'm steering. This is a thing you do in ghostwriting. And
go ahead.
so you asked me how long my planning process was. And I typically take 3 calls for the person who really doesn't know what's going on and really doesn't know what they want to say and really needs to do the thinking in depth. It can be as much as 5 calls, which is a
Got
lot.
it.
But I don't have people get stuck in revision, unhappy with how it ends up on the page in the way some other people
And
do,
that's your
because.
why for why it's 5 calls, which is so good.
But you have to warn them because you're doing the most stressful part right up front when they've just met you. And so it takes a lot of like listening and affirming and holding their emotional hand. And that's normal. And that's okay. But not everybody wants to do the they haven't thought it through kind of client yet, but that's my client. They know their stuff. They have a book. And I'm happy to like push them and help them show how good they are and how smart they are on the page. But anyway, please go back to what you were saying.
I already forgot what I was saying, but I really liked what you were saying. But what you were saying reminded me of when we were talking earlier. I asked you what's a question that you would ask 100 other ghostwriters if you could, and you were one of the first things that came to your mind was how do you set expectations with your clients? But I actually think what you just did was like such a great way of setting an expectation with a client, which is like this is going to be a lengthy planning process. It can be frustrating, but my clients who go through this process with me don't end up in revision hell. I think that's such a great way of setting an expectation, at least around that one particular part of the process.
Well, and I figured out that success or failure in ghostwriting is a lot about expectations. And that is an ongoing difficult process to figure out how to do, actually. And so I'm always trying to level up. How did people do it better? How can I learn from something that went wrong last time? How can we get ahead of it this time? And I think that's the difference between a newbie ghostwriter, even if they're really good on the page, and somebody who's a lot more experienced and a lot more able to deal with curveballs.
Yeah, same. Alex, for newer ghostwriters that are listening to this episode, if they only like take one thing away, what would you want them to get out of it?
Don't put yourself in a short deadline situation unless the client knows what they're talking about and can tell you immediately with no prompting.
Got it.
If you have to steer or you have to if they're out of order at all in how they're talking in your first like sales call, if they don't respond to prompts well, if they aren't willing to clarify or speak in depth, don't end up in a situation in which you have to get a book out super quickly, because you will just end up in living hell. It will not be good. Like, take a little bit more time, even if you charge a little less, so that you have time and space to work with a client who will work with you, as you're figuring out where the hiccups are. And then ask people honestly, like, I can see that what I said didn't land with you. Can you tell me more about that and how I can improve going forward?
Excellent. Alex, where can listeners connect with you?
I am currently under alexhughescapel.com. Hughes has an E in it. And I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter, but may get off of it. We'll find out. And just here.
Great. Well, I've really appreciated talking to you. Thank you so much for being on my podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.